Welcome to the Invisible Church Podcast. I'm Pastor Tim Smith of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in New Ulm, Minnesota. In this installment, we meditate on Genesis chapter 1, and especially an introduction to the book of Genesis. This is Genesis chapter 1, and so we're starting a new series. Pastor Scharf and I will alternate every few weeks, so I don't know how far we'll get. My prediction to him today was that we would be at least to the end of verse 1 of chapter 1 before he starts sometime in July. So before we go, I have slides on the screen for us and also what's before you on the handout. And if you have a question, please feel free to ask. But I'll try to get to most of it. I want to start with the first page of the handout and just comment that Jerome, writing in about the year 400, said that nobody under 30 should read, and this is read aloud, the first chapter of the Bible or explain it to other people. He said the same thing was said among the Jews about Song of Solomon, that you had to be at least 30 before you got to read it. At least, and what I mean by that is read it out loud to people. Aristotle, things that Aristotle says, Aristotle was the pupil of Plato, who was, of course, the pupil of Socrates. And Aristotle's pupil was Alexander the Great. There's a direct line there from Socrates to Plato to Aristotle to Alexander. Pupil to student, and so forth. Things that Aristotle said seem to recall some things that we can trace back to Genesis, and also particularly to also to Isaiah. And it's led me to wonder whether these guys maybe were aware or acquainted with a translation of the Bible into Greek that was present in their time. And that would be just about right. For example, Alexander the Great, and the beginning of what would later become the translation of the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Bible. So the dates kind of work out, and some of the things that they say seem to relate. But that's all the more I'll say about Christian commentaries on Genesis. Probably the best commentary prior to Luther is Luther. There is no good commentary on Genesis before Martin Luther's commentary on Genesis. By the way, it's 8 volumes. For Luther to get through 50 chapters took him 8 books. So it's the first 8 books of Luther's works in English, first 8 volumes, and it's magnificent. Prior to Luther, a lot of people tried it, and everybody failed. Even Luther's hero, who was St. Augustine, really, really stumbles and falls on his face in Genesis, particularly in the opening chapters. The days of creation we refer to as often the 6 days, and in Greek, you say 6 days by saying the word hexameron. Everybody say hexameron. Hemera is the Greek word for day, and hex is the Greek word for 6. So it's the hexameron. Since God rested on the 7th day, you don't have to comment on the 7th day, or you just tack it onto the 6th, but you mostly talk about the 6 days. And there are lots and lots of books in ancient times written in Greek and Latin called the hexameron. The hexameron by this guy, the hexameron by that guy. You can hardly look over ancient commentaries without tripping over a couple of hexamerons. So they're all over the place. But the ancient authors really, really don't know what they're doing with the days of the 6 days. And if you don't understand what a day is, how can you comment about what happened on the day? And I'll talk about this a little bit later. We're going to come, especially after day 3 in the creation story, we'll talk more about the length of the days and what's happening in the days, and a picture you're going to draw on page 6 of your handout about what happens on each of the 6 days. I find it handy to help people to remember what's on each of the 6 days by using that. By the way, before the class ends, since this is Holy Week, before the class ends today, somebody remind me toward the end of the period, and I'd like to give you a memory help that will help you remember the 7 words from the cross in their correct order for the rest of your life. Okay? I think it'll work. Beth, you've seen it? You think it'll work? Okay. We'll come back to it, but I want to mention that Augustine, Hilary of Poitiers, and others, they tend to make a mistake on the length of the days of creation. And in ancient times, the mistake was always they thought the days, their opinion was that the days were shorter than what we have in Genesis. So they always err on the side of being too short. Augustine thought everything happens in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye at the creation. We have to cram 6 days of creation into 1 microsecond of time. And so he thinks it's angelic days or something like that. And others with great respect to Augustine, other people in medieval times then just followed Augustine and said, well, he must be right. He's Augustine, right? So it's like before class, Elaine was mentioning how great John Jeske's commentary on Genesis is, our People's Bible's commentary on one of the best volumes in the whole set. And, what if Jeske had made some weird mistake? We'd all follow it because we respected the volume, right? By the way, I don't think he did. So since we're going to come back to it later this morning, I will mention with regard to the Exodus, because that helps us with our date for when this got written, a little rhyme to help you remember the pharaohs. These are all dates B.C., of course, but in 1492, the pharaoh's name was Thutmose II. Good. In 1446 B.C., that's the year that the Exodus happened, in 1446 B.C., the pharaoh's name was Thutmose III. Okay, so those are the two pharaohs we're dealing with. Thutmose II, he's got a son in there who was very briefly pharaoh, but then Thutmose III seems to, and notice that both Thutmose and Moses had the same name element, Thutmoses and Moses. So it seems to have been a common, a royal name at this time. And of course, who was Moses' foster mother? The Pharaoh's daughter, so that she would give him a name that was a kind of a common name. And then Moses himself lets us know, by the way, this means drawn out of the water. It's not a reference to some Egyptian god. So he puts, what would Luther have said? Moses put the best construction on everything, right? Even the name his mother gave him. So when we follow Genesis, we're going to let Exodus 20 be our guide. Exodus 20 is, of course, the middle of the Ten Commandments. That's where we find the Ten Commandments. And in the third commandment, we have our explanation of what a day of creation is. Do you see that on your handout? In the last paragraph, the third line down, it says, God's explanation of the third commandment presents this simple truth. Can we all read that verse together? In 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy. So God says, work for 6 days and then rest on the seventh to Moses in the Ten Commandments. So how does God take the days of creation? 24 hours, 6 regular days, and then rest on the Sabbath day, right? Yeah, so if God takes them that way, should I take them that way? I believe so. Yes. Okay, so that's our first page there. Another passage that helps us there with Genesis is Hebrews 11:3. By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. That's how we understand that God made everything in the universe out of nothing. Otherwise, we might not be sure. The verb in Hebrew for create is pronounced, let's all say it with me, or after me rather, it's pronounced bara. Let's all say bara. Bara, that's the word for create. And it means to fashion or form something. It is not always to make something out of nothing. For example, God will bara Adam out of something. What do you make Adam out of?
Dust.
The dust of the earth, the dirt, right? Adam, whose name could have been, his nickname could have been Muddy, right? Or Dirt Man or whatever. Dusty, that would have been a good nickname for Adam. That's kind of more Western or something like that. And Eve, she God also baraz Eve, out of Adam's something. We'll talk about what a rib is a little bit later. I think it's a rib, but we're not really sure. So something in Adam's side, okay? Probably not his birthmark, but probably his rib, whatever that was. We'll talk about that later. But bara always in Scripture has God as the subject, okay? So sometimes it's out of nothing, sometimes it's out of something. God's always the subject. And the Hebrew scribes are also careful to tell us how often the word God created or something like that shows up as at the beginning of a verse in the Bible. There are all kinds of extra notes. I will try not to burden you with too many, but some of them are just too interesting not to share. So I'll share some of them with you. The word Genesis, the Hebrew word for the first book of the Bible is the first word of the Bible. It's pronounced Bereshit. Bereshit, and it means in the beginning. Okay? Not when God began to make, but simply in the beginning. It's a time reference with no explanation. No, we would say grammatically, no antecedent. So if there is no frame of reference, which beginning is it? It's the beginning with a capital B, the very big beginning, right? In Greek, the way to say that is Genesis. And then in Latin, they just transliterate with Liber Genesis, the book of Genesis. And we get our English word Genesis from that, which means origin. If you generate a family, you have begun a family, haven't you? Right? And that's, or every night, maybe you generate a supper. For good or bad, right? Whether it's burned or not, you've generated a supper, and it's the Genesis of the meal. And this is how God began everything. The beginning history of God's grace. Author, who wrote Genesis?
Moses.
Ah, you say that with confidence. Now prove it. Those are the first five books. Now prove that Moses is the author. Jesus keeps saying, Moses says, Moses says. Also others say that as well. Let's begin with Joshua. Elaine very correctly recited the first five books. We call them the Pentateuch, the five. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. They take us basically into and out of Egypt. That's that cycle of books. How did Israel ever get to Egypt? How did they get out again? And then how did they ever get into the land of Canaan? That's the business going on with these five books of the Bible. Joshua, the hero and probably author of the next book, says, tell the Israelites, or God saying to Joshua, tell the Israelites to designate the cities of refuge as I instructed you through Moses. Moses talks about cities of refuge in Exodus and Deuteronomy. In the book of Judges, that talks about the Lord's commands given to their forefathers through Moses. Solomon does it in Kings. The author of Kings does it, probably Jeremiah, does it also in 2 Kings. We have the chronicler, probably Ezra, talking about the author, and Ezra again in Nehemiah. Look down at Daniel. Therefore, the curses and sworn judgments written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, have been poured out on us because we have sinned against you. What's the first curse of the Bible? To the snake. Yeah, I will put enmity or hatred between you and the woman, right? The first curse of the Bible. Daniel is telling us here in Daniel 9:11 that of course, don't get too wrapped up with that number, because that's a modern red flag number. But I've had people in Bible class saying, ooh, that's 9/11, that's 9/11. Well, that's, yeah, that happened just, 17 years ago. Yeah, Well, most of, well, Habakkuk doesn't, but others, but most of them. But Daniel 9:11 does tell us that Moses is the author of Genesis 3:15. Okay, there is one of our proof passages, not just that Moses wrote the law, that is Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy, but Genesis itself. And then Jesus will refer to Moses also quite a bit later on. Jesus especially goes back to Moses when he talks about one human, or one gift to humanity, an institution of God.
Marriage.
Marriage. Jesus quotes from Moses when he talks about marriage also. So, Moses as the author. The date of the book, I don't know when Genesis was written. I know that Exodus was written between 1446 and 1447 BC. That's when Israel was at Mount Sinai, period. Also, Leviticus was written probably during 1446, 1447, because Leviticus ends before they leave Mount Sinai. Numbers picks it up from that moment. Numbers is the continuation of the story of the Exodus, so it's more of the story stuff. From leaving Mount Sinai until we get to the death of Aaron and Miriam, and then you get the bronze snake, and then the prophet Balaam comes and tries to speak curses on Israel. There are about seven of those, and he can't curse Israel in the end, and so he gives up and leaves. And then you have the great battles and the war against the Amorite kings Sihon, and then his companion king Og, king of Bashan. You know, if there ever was a man with a leopard skin and a club walking out of a cave, it must have been Og, king of Bashan. He's the guy with a gigantic bed. Remember that? After they kill him, he's got this enormous, whatever it was, 12, 15 foot long bed. And so forth. That's Og. But they kill Og. They kill Sihon. And they are occupying the territory then east of the Jordan River, just across, we would think, just across the creek from Jericho. And that's where the book of Deuteronomy begins. And what has happened is that now 40 years after the Exodus, it's now 1406 B.C., Moses is facing a nation of Israelites who weren't grown up yet, or weren't born yet, many of them, when they left Egypt. And so what does Moses have to do? I'd better tell them the law. And so it's a second giving of the law. Deuteronomos, a second giving of the law. That's what Deuteronomy means. So Moses preaches five sermons. There are five big discourses in Deuteronomy. By the way, Matthew follows the same pattern. When Jesus is talking in Matthew, there are five big discourses of Jesus in Matthew. So these five major discourses. And the first one in Deuteronomy is the Ten Commandments. So Moses starts off, Deuteronomy 4 or 5 is the prologue, and then the giving of the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy. Okay, the theme of Genesis, I'm sorry, I didn't tell you when Genesis was written. So was it written while Moses was a shepherd before the Exodus, like in 1486 to 1446? The only clue we have there is the first word of the book of Exodus, which is "and." And these are the names of Shema. That usually happens in Hebrew if it's a continuation of the previous book. So did Moses at least have Genesis started then when he wrote Exodus? That's a possibility, that Moses had either written all of Genesis or had at least begun it, and then he's got to get Exodus down because they're there at the moment, and God starts throwing commandments at him left and right. He's got to write it all down. By the way, Moses had a scribe. Are you aware of that? Up on Mount Sinai, somebody went with him. You know who it was? Joshua. Yeah, Joshua actually goes up with him and writes everything down. So oftentimes it'll say Moses went up, but later we're told, and by the way, Joshua was there with him. So he gets permission to bring up a scribe and Joshua heads up the mountainside with him too. That's why it probably is correct that Joshua did write the book of Joshua. He wasn't just a general, Like do we kind of belittle our military leaders who are brilliant and have all kinds of instruction and all kinds of things by saying, you know, this guy or that guy, oh, he's just a military guy. There's still kind of a bias about that in our country, isn't there? Yeah, Beth.
Did Joshua go up before or after the golden calf?
He was there with them. They're talking about it when they're up there. Okay. I hear the sound. Okay. That's a conversation between Moses and Joshua. And you know it's not Aaron because he's down. That's one thing that they got right in the Charlton Heston movie. Aaron's there sitting on top of the golden calf, hammering away. And of course, what's Aaron's excuse? Oh, the people threw all their gold at me and out came this calf. Yeah, what's that hammer in your hand, Aaron? All right. So Genesis written at least at about the same time, if not partly before, maybe entirely before Exodus. Certainly as a shepherd, he had time to write Genesis in 40 years, you know, after he left Egypt. That's Moses' lifespan. 40 years in Egypt as a kind of a prince. Then he strangles a guy. And then after he kills an Egyptian and buries him in the sand, he gets caught, he runs away, he's in Midian then for 40 years, meets his wife Zipporah, and they begin to have a family. He's got a little baby boy named, is it Gershom? And then when he's 80 years old, God calls him then finally to begin his life's work. How would you like it if at 80 God called you to begin your life's work? And then Moses lives to 120, but he's with the Israelites those last 40 years, getting out of Egypt, creating the Passover, delivering the Ten Commandments and the other laws, governing God's people, establishing a system of judges or elders, preaching again all of the law, and then dying on Mount Nebo before they actually are enter into the Promised Land and walk across the Jordan on dry land. They left Egypt on dry land through the Red Sea. They enter Canaan on dry land through the Jordan. When the waters rolled back, and they named it Roll Back, Gilgal. Okay, all right. So the theme, there is a little set of commentaries on the Bible called they're the InterVarsity Press commentaries, and those commentaries are often quite good. They're quite succinct. They just keep themselves to the text and what's going on with the text. They're paperbacks. They used to be hardcovers, now they're paperbacks. And when I was in school, I was paying about $5-6 for a volume. I have most of them in my office if you'd like to see them. But the Old Testament edition on Genesis is by I believe he's a British Oxford professor named Derek Kidner. And maybe I should call him Dr. Kidner, but Derek Kidner wrote this about Genesis. Genesis is in various ways almost nearer the New Testament than the Old, and some of its topics are barely heard again till their implication can fully emerge in the gospel. Forgive my typos there. Some of those doctrines, those topics that show up in Genesis and do not really turn up again in full force until the New Testament, include marriage and what it means. It was just an institution in the Old Testament, but Jesus and Paul will talk about what marriage actually means. The fall of man, the jealousy of Cain, the judgment of the flood, the imputed righteousness of the believer, the rival sons and the promise of the flesh, the profanity of Esau, the pilgrim status of God's people, also other things I can think of. The doctrine of the resurrection of the dead is in Genesis, and then it doesn't really show up much in the Old Testament until you get to finally the Gospels, and then it's all over the place in Matthew and in Paul. Where is the doctrine of the resurrection of the dead in Genesis? We're going to encounter it in the Abraham story, where Abraham has got Isaac, and he tells the servants, we're going to go over there and worship, knowing that God told him to kill his son, and then he says, we will come back to you. So there's evidence there that already, it's Genesis 12, 13, that there's already an understanding of the resurrection of the flesh. And of course, what other famous book of the Bible has a resurrection passage? I know that my Redeemer lives.
Job.
Did you say Job? Good for you.
I said John.
Oh, John. It's Job. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that was his name.
Job. John Job? Maybe. The theme for Genesis that we're going to follow, and that was, it's the theme that we typically learn at the seminary, is it is the beginning history of God's saving activity. That's a long theme, but it fits all of Genesis. It is the beginning history of God's saving activity. And then you see how God saves first through the patriarchs, or rather in the ancient world, and then after the flood through the patriarchs, especially Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and we continue then with Joseph. Now I have an outline here before we take a short break. First of all, the ancient world. You've got chapters 1 to 11 we're going to be studying here in the near future. The creation, the fall, the sin of Cain, the patriarchs before the flood, and the flood. And then the list of patriarchs from Noah to Abraham. Make sure Norma gets a copy of the handout, please. And then the second half of the book is God's saving activity among the patriarchs, which is Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And if I can just quickly run through the word toledot. If you want to pronounce the TH at the end as hard or soft, that's up to you. But can we all please say the word toledot? Toledot. Toledot. Sounds like you're saying hold the door, right? But toledot. Toledot is the word that occurs over and over again in Genesis for the account. This is the account of heaven and earth, Adam, Noah, etc. You can translate it as history or the generations of, but toledot is an account. I suppose it's related to the word yalud, which means either a learner or yalad, a teacher. And then the toledot are the things taught, the lessons or the generations. There are 10 of these toledot in Genesis, and it looks like Moses meant to put in exactly 10 items as a sign of completeness. 10 is the number of completeness in the Bible. I have many, many times heard people of other denominations tell me that 7 is the number of completeness in the Bible. I don't know where they're getting that. 7 is the number of holiness in the Bible. 10 is the number of completeness. It relates kind of to what we call an Apgar score today. When do you hear an Apgar score? No, when a baby's born, Dr. Apgar used his name, APGAR, as the five things you look at in a newborn infant. And it's like appearance, pinkness, respiration, and whatever the other things stand for. And according to a score of, it's either 1 to 3 or 1 to 5, then the baby gets a score at 1 minute after birth, and again at 5 or 10 minutes after birth, then that's your combined Apgar score. It has nothing to do with your college application later on, but some parents treat it like it would. But there are 10 of these accounts. Notice that there's a heaven and earth account, an Adam story, a Noah story, a very brief sons of Noah story, then the story of Shem, then Terah. Who's Terah?
Abraham's
dad. However, the Terah account is really about Abraham. It's just that Terah is still living, so we call it the account of Terah, but it's really the stories about Abraham. Then we have Ishmael, Isaac, Esau. Notice how short the Ishmael one is? It's at 7 verses. Also, the Shem one is about 17 verses. Then finally, the Jacob story, chapters 37 to 50. Chapter 37, I just preached on this. It actually is the beginning of not of Jacob's story, but of Joseph. That's Joseph sold into slavery. So most of the Jacob story, Jacob is still living. So it's got his name, but it's really about Joseph. We'll break there just for a moment.